Hey, it's Chaz and AJ.
Hello.
Thank you for listening to our podcast.
Thank you.
We hope you enjoy it. And please subscribe, comment, share, do all those things that make us look good.
And be nice.
Thank you. Dennis House, News 8, got to sit down with the vice president yesterday. How'd it go?
It went well. I apparently, you know, passed the strip search. You forgot that part of it. No, I'm just kidding.
They got the plastic
gloves.
They got the plastic gloves. Very friendly. Bone River!
There is a lot of security, though, when someone comes to town like that. They come days in advance. We always find out about it, like, maybe 48 hours or something like that. But the Secret Service keeps it totally under wraps. They probably knew about it a couple weeks ago, and then they send people up, and they spend a few days in New Britain, and they walk through the building, and they make sure it's okay. Yeah, let's do it here. Then they decide to go with that venue, and then they start the background checks of people who are going to be there and who's going to be on the stage and who's going to be in the building. But it went well. It was actually a standing interview. They didn't want to sit, so we stood. That's how they had it set up.
They wanted to leave us. Why? The car was still running. You can shut the car off. No, we're good. We're good.
Exactly. They just pull in. They jump out real quickly, and and that's how that went.
You know, they just roll the car up. Window goes down. You stay outside the car. Just shout through the window.
Yeah, very quickly. But it's such a massive undertaking. I knew when I drove from Hartford to New Britain, there were police at every overpass, every exit, and this was hours before. So they're really keeping an eye on pretty much everything. And then when she flies into Windsor Locks, and then they have the motorcade. They don't shut the highway down for a vice president, but they create what is called a bubble. And so there's like a big distance between any surrounding cars. So you can't like pass the vice president's motorcade, but it will be like, it'll slow down in front of you a little bit, or it'll be right behind you.
Okay, that's good to know in future.
That's a big...
I guess that's how that works. For a president, they do shut the highway down.
Yeah.
That's a lot of work.
Imagine you're paranoid, you're driving down the road, and there's cops in every exit. You got a little bit of weed, and you're like, oh, God.
Yeah, it's a bad day to be driving through Connecticut if you have a warrant for your arrest. You're like, oh.
Ah, damn it, they don't.
What is going on here?
All right, just arrest me. Who the hell is this guy? That would suck.
How much time did you have with her?
5 minutes.
Wow, that long.
So they don't give you a lot, but no. It was, and there's hours of setup to go into that. You know, Chaz, you have, let's see, we had to get there by 10:45, and the interview wasn't until 2. Other crews had to get there a little bit earlier to be in the actual audience, to be in the I guess you'd call it the gallery, where the media goes into the back of the event. We got to go in there a little bit, but, you know, they go through your equipment, and there's a metal detector, so oh, it's wow. Quite a process to get in. I mean, it really is.
Any walk-up music? Any walk-up music? I'm picturing the Imperial March. Dun,
dun, dun, dun. Well, they did play, it wasn't Hail to the Chief, but something that you hear on presidential visits. They did play with them when you first met.
There is a theme for the vice president.
Right.
Hail to the Chief is for the president, but yeah. There is one for the vice president.
Moving on up.
There is one, and I don't know what it is. Maybe it's on...
To the east side.
Oh, this is it? This is it.
I like mine better. Because, you know, someday they could
this
become
part
president.
Is its own song. Did they play this before Hail to the Chief?
Oh.
This is... Here it is.
Oh, God, this is boring. It's like a funeral march.
This isn't great.
What is that for? What is that one you're playing right now?
This is for the vice president.
It's called Hail Columbia.
Oh, it is. Yep, that's exactly what it sounded like, yeah. Right. Now that I think about it, it was. And she has her own flag, too. There's a vice presidential flag.
Oh, the theme for Miami Vice, she's vice president. Mian Hammer.
Washington, D.C. vice.
That'd be cool.
And the entourage she travels with is amazing. There were so many people there. It was just absolutely remarkable.
Like how many?
Well, she had so many aides. I'd have to say at least a dozen aides, probably. And, you know, you never get the full count of the Secret Service because they're everywhere. But there were so many of those black SUVs out there in her motorcade pulling in. And, yeah, so there were a lot of them. And some of them come a few days early, as I mentioned, to just to make sure everything's okay. And then there was the it was supported, of course, by Connecticut State Police, New Britain Police, Central Connecticut State University Police, even the New Britain Fire Department. There were a lot of people there.
Dennis House is on News 8. He was with the vice president yesterday.
Didn't she, like, last time grab a whole bunch of pizzas or something like that? She was in town, and they gave, like, a whole bunch of pizzas.
She didn't have them.
She was, like, feeding a whole bunch of folks, and she didn't have any? She just, like, fed everybody else?
So the pizza story remains a mystery to this day, but she came to West Haven in 2021, March of 2021. I interviewed her right after that, and she spoke at a daycare center, as I recall. And she landed at Tweed, correct, as I recall? And
yes.
They met her with some pizzas. That was one of the reports out there, that they wanted her to try New Haven pizza.
Oh.
Now, I don't really know that. My guess is that Secret Service just doesn't let the president and vice president eat whatever's dropped off to them.
We have kind of that rule here, too.
Right? So, yes, yeah, everybody else ate it.
Especially with the edibles now. That
you're right.
We need people to be productive.
Sure, you know, you never have all this security. You're just going to let some random person drop a pizza off and eat it.
Right.
So,
can you imagine if someone put edibles in the vice president's pizza?
Right.
Oh. And then she does an interview with Dennis.
Right. Hey, man.
There you go.
My first question is, where are your shoes?
Dennis, can I have that tie?
This is awesome, man.
I know we requested a standing interview, but do you have like a couch?
You don't have any of the
like a blanket.
I want to lay down for this interview. Can I?
Get a Gatorade and cottonmouth.
Who makes a good milkshake around here, man?
But later we heard that the pizzas that were sent to her were not eaten by her, but they did order from, I think it's Zupardi's in West Haven.
Nice.
So the traditional ones like Sally's and Pepe's, they did not do. This was what we were told at the very beginning. And then you hear, like, you know, obviously this crew has to eat too, the Secret Service. So it's possible that they ordered, you know, 20 pizzas for the crew. We don't know if one ever got to the vice president. So that kind of remains a mystery to this day.
Yeah. That is the horrible thing about being one of those top people. You can't just have a life. You
no.
can't just say, I'm going for a walk.
Exactly. Every decision.
Right.
It's like, all right.
Right.
I'd like to go for
no,
a
you
walk.
Can't.
Right.
15 emails later.
Right.
Armies.
It becomes scheduled.
Right.
Yeah. Just think of like the
just
simplest decision. It's like, you know what? The elevator's taking too long. I'm going to take the stairs. Okay, all right. Like everybody's got to like run up the stairs
you're
ahead
not
of you.
The stairs.
Oh,
you
my
the,
God.
You have to go to the bathroom. Everybody's in the stalls next to you.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, it's true. You cannot do anything if you're the president or the vice president in terms of freedom to do just whatever you want to do. You have to be accompanied by everyone. They were telling me yesterday that they have to turn over their wallets. You know, they are not allowed to like buy stuff online or things like that. If you want to get your wife some flowers, someone has to do that for you. You pay for it, but you can't physically like get on the phone and call 1-800-Flowers.
Wow.
So it is kind of restrictive. And yesterday, she is surrounded by people all the time.
Yeah.
And yeah, it's very constraining. She had we were told, and we did learn that she had to shake 50 hands, and then there was a thing called a clutch, where you get to meet the vice president, but there aren't pictures of it or something. I don't know what that was all about. But so there are people who are chosen from various walks of life. Some of them are lawmakers, some of them are dignitaries, and some of them are just ordinary people who get to meet the dignitary when they come to town. So there was a side room. It was set up, and there was a sign that said on camera at all times, which means when you walked into this room to spend time with the vice president, the whole thing was being recorded.
Right, so don't scratch yourself in a bad area.
Yeah, you know, they don't allow you to walk in with yeah, you know, you're not allowed to walk in with an umbrella or certain equipment and
right.
you know, things like that. And
right,
they, you know, they take precautions.
Yeah.
Yeah.
When
you know,
we,
and
Dennis House, News 8 is on, sat down with the vice president yesterday, or he stood, she sat down, whatever.
Right.
When we
no, we both stood. We both stood.
Oh, wow,
that's interesting.
The standoff.
Gotcha. Well, that because it would be weird if you stood and she sat down.
Are you taller than her? She taller than you? What's up?
Dennis is taller than her. She had heels on, and
okay.
she was still a little bit shorter than
okay.
Dennis.
All right, cool.
But when we went to Washington D.C. and interviewed Dick Cheney, who was the sitting vice president in Senator Lieberman's office, it was they brought in a stenographer. Everything this guy says is like written down.
Yeah.
There's just a script of every word he says.
Yep.
All day long. Yeah.
When he burps, right? Burp. Yep.
And we had to wear these pens.
Yeah,
and when
that.
They handed us the pens, they said, don't lose this pen.
Yes.
This gets you in the room.
Right. Mine's still welded to my suit. I pressed on, so I'm like, argh!
And they had this.
Like, it's very interesting.
Yeah.
You know, what you said, they, you know, like every single moment is accounted for and watched very carefully. Like, you're not allowed to take a picture. Someone has to take the picture for you. You're not allowed to do certain things. There's always someone there to do it for you because they don't want, like, for instance, as you know, we have clip-on microphones that we wear in this business, and we put on our subjects that we are interviewing when they come on shows and things like that around the field.
Yeah.
We're not allowed to use a lavalier. It's called a lavalier mic. We're not allowed to use those on the vice president. We had to have a boom mic that kind of was set, that was put in front of her or above her head or something like that. They don't allow you to, like, I guess, touch the vice president or touch the president.
No touching.
Yeah, that'd be weird.
No touching.
No touching. They start with that.
No touching.
Don't touch.
No touching. But no touching. You know, you also have to think, too.
But
over
you got to run the wire under the shirt.
Everything.
There's a whole thing.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah.
Yeah. You don't do that with the
It's kind of invasive. I'm not going to lie.
Yeah.
Yep. So, you put that battery pack somewhere. Yep.
Yeah. But I'll tell you, you know, I'm sure it's a grueling job to work with the vice president. And I was talking with some of them. It's a generally tends to be a younger group of people because you are working all the time. And you right. certainly put in more hours than they do. And you're up early in the morning and you're traveling all the time. And they all seem pretty invigorated by it. It is pretty exciting, you know, because you never know what you're going to be doing or where you're going to be going.
That's wild. Dennis House is on News 8, spoke to the vice president, had 5 minutes with her yesterday. Did you get anything out of her that was, like, headline worthy?
Well, you know, one thing I asked her, and, you know, with 5 minutes, you have to be very careful. You have to pick your questions pretty carefully because politicians are trained to burn that first question with a two-minute answer, right?
Yes.
So all of a sudden your time is gone, and they're very strict about it, you know, Chaz. They don't allow you to, like, go over the time. And, you know, I was getting the, you know, that rap signal where the person's like swirling their finger, like it's time, it's done. And then they'll just step in front of it. If you were to push it.
Can I ask you an honest question? This has to be frustrating for you because I know you're a political geek. We've had lots of conversations off the air about stuff.
Yeah.
You know a lot about
it.
In
a good way. Yes.
You want to, you know, be respectful, but also you want to grab stuff and pin people down. Do you, you know, there's this thing, like if you gave her not a hard time, but if you were trying to pin her down on an answer, you'd never get another interview with her again. And it's the same with the Connecticut politicians.
Yeah.
If you give them a hard time, like if they're like, they walk away from the interview, like, damn it.
Yeah.
You're not going to get any more FaceTime. And as a political correspondent, or you're like the chief political correspondent, you can't burn that bridge because then now you got nothing.
Yeah, you're shut out.
Isn't that frustrating?
You really do have to be judicious about the way that you ask questions. Absolutely. Because you're right. It'll never happen again. And if she was up for reelection, we certainly would have been tougher on her. If she was going to be on the ballot right now, and this was one of those things where we were vetting some, you know, candidates or trying to get an answer, we would be a lot tougher. And if it was a local politician, obviously we're a little tougher on them because we have more time and they're more accessible. So having said that, you know, we decided that we weren't going to go down. You know, we didn't approach the immigration issue because that is a couple of minutes that, you know, I've watched interviews with her, so I know how she's going to answer it.
Right.
I know how much time it's going to take.
You're not going to get anything new.
Yeah, we're not going to get anything new. And, you know, all of these, you know, the president and the vice president tend to be somewhat controlled. They're not going to let some guy from Hartford bring down the vice president. They're just not going to let that happen.
No. That's right.
And you know, they've been known, you know, politicians do sometimes stop interviews and the whole bit. And so you do have to be careful. But one thing I did want to ask her about was she's very critical of Clarence Thomas, and she mentioned him again yesterday. So I said, hey, do you want him to resign? And she sort of didn't give a direct answer to it. But publicly, she's been very critical of him because of the Roe versus Wade. I also asked her about she was sort of a victim of in the presidential primary process of really not getting any traction in those early states of New Hampshire and Iowa. And so she dropped out. And as you know, Connecticut's trying to get an earlier primary. And does it seem fair to the whole system that every year it's these two states with a lack of diversity
that are, you know. It's a good question.
So,
all right, well, the interview that Dennis House had with the vice president on their website, and we'll link up, 99.1 PLR, 95.9 The Fox, Chaz and AJ in the morning. Dennis, thank you, brother. Appreciate it.
Hey, quickly, someone just walked in and just wants to say a quick hi.
Okay.
I think you might know her.
Hi, Chad.
Kara Sundland. How are you?
I'm well. Good morning, everyone.
Morning.
Yes, I had to take the trash out to the road last night because somebody was busy.
Take a metaphor.
That's right. I'm interviewing the vice president. Can you take the garbage out?
He really wasn't.
Listen, this is how marriages work, right?
She fell for it.
You hit us on a good morning because usually it's chaotic in here with teenagers being noisy and getting out the door, but it's kind of quiet today, which is good. So.
Nice. Good. All right. Well, we watch both of you on your separate channels.
Yes.
And at the same time.
We have two TVs together.
Pretty wild.
All right. Thank you, Dennis. Good hearing from you, Kara. Appreciate it. Jonathan Churchill from Fairfield hiked the Appalachian Trail, did the whole thing.
Wow.
Yeah, I just think if I'm walking down the Appalachian Trail, I'm not going to see someone overweight.
Well, I think you'd be surprised because,
really?
Well, when I started the trail, I was probably like 40 pounds overweight. And the guy that I ended up hiking most of it with started around 330 pounds.
Wow.
And he lost over 100 pounds throughout the journey.
Really?
Wow,
yeah,
that's
a long trail. it's a physical trail, obviously. You're climbing up and down mountains and stuff, but it's really more of a mental test than anything.
How do you get to that point where you think, I'm a young guy, I got my whole life ahead of me, let me drop everything and go walk for 6 months?
Yeah, I mean, well, the pandemic definitely pushed me in that direction.
Yeah. What did you do before the pandemic?
I did sales. So I was with a medical device company. I did sales for about 10 years.
So did your company get really busy during COVID?
Yeah. So I joined, I was with one company for about 4 years, and then I joined this new company who sold ventilators. That was
great.
One of the primary things we did.
And seriously, yeah.
Yeah. So I joined it at the perfect time, right, you know, before the pandemic hit and stuff. But my job switched from being customer facing to just phone calling and phone banking, and it was pretty miserable for that two years. And
yeah,
I mean, everyone went through that stuff.
And everybody had this wake up call where this life isn't guaranteed.
Yeah,
everything can turn.
Yeah,
that's a big part of it for sure.
So then you decide. So what was there one moment where it's like, pop, I'm doing it?
Yeah, for sure. So I this was something I always wanted to do back in high school, because in Connecticut, the AT is very much part of like the zeitgeist. Everyone kind of knows about it, especially people that are in the hiking community.
Yeah.
And I was kind of really not happy with where I was in my job. And me and my dad went to Baxter State Park, which is actually where the trail ends, for a rafting trip. And I was kind of just sitting there after the day of rafting, like on a nice beach by one of the lakes. And I was just like, my head was clear. And I was just like, you know, this might be a time where I could pull the trigger and get this done and check this off my list and really kind of reset my life.
So you had enough money to take time off of work.
Yeah.
You left that job or leave of absence?
Yeah, no, I completely quit the job, sold my car, got rid of the apartment. I did the full thing. You kind of, you know.
Were you in a relationship?
No, nothing like that. So
we talked to someone else who walked along. What did he walk? Across the country.
Yeah, across country.
And he was kind of in the same situation as you.
Sure, yeah. Yeah, you kind of, if you see those windows of opportunity for kind of anything in life, I think sometimes you just have to pull the trigger, and it seems crazy to some people, but luckily I had very supportive family and friends and made all that stuff really easy.
Take a hike. He said, okay.
Yeah.
Why don't you go take a hike? Okay.
All right. Wow, he really did it.
Oh, my God, he did. Yeah.
He's still doing it.
Come back, damn
Jonathan's
it.
From Fairfield. He walked the Appalachian Trail. How long is that?
Well, the trail itself is around 2,200 miles, so from Georgia to Maine.
Wow.
And it took me around 6 months, and that's pretty average.
Six months.
See, to me, that sounds fast.
That's not like you did it for a day, went back to work, came out on the weekend, did it for 2 days.
I'm like hanging out for a couple of days in one spot.
Every day for 6 months.
Yeah.
Phil, didn't you do a part of it?
I did do a part of it, in Vermont, and it's beautiful. And the further north you get, from what I understand, the more difficult it gets.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
See, I was doing a dirt bike.
They rate the trail like on like a 10 scale. So like in Georgia, it's like, you know, this is like a 1 or a 2. And then like by the time you get to Maine, it's like, all right, yeah, this is 9 and 10 territory now.
Oh, really?
See, I'd be afraid like things like bears and stuff like that as I'm walking down this trail.
Do you have any bear encounters?
Yeah. I had quite a few. I had around 3. The first one kind of really eases you into it. You see the bear, and they're just so not interested in you.
Really?
That it kind of just calms you down. But we did have one, a pretty good-sized one, in our camp one day. And we're like, me and my buddy were just dead tired. And typically, you're supposed to pack up and leave camp, but we kind of just followed it with our eyes and saw it was leaving. And we're like, you know, we're good. We're good.
That's okay. It's eating that guy in tent number three.
Yeah, yeah.
We're good. Yeah. We're That's good. He was a pretty big-sized guy.
Yeah, yeah.
It's okay.
We're done.
Screaming now.
We don't need to leave. Let's analyze this first. I'm freaking tired.
He'll be full for a while with that guy. We're good.
What are you eating while you're hiking the trail?
Yeah, so you try a lot of different things. You're out there for 6 months, so it kind of evolves over time. Like in the beginning, for lunch and dinner, I was trying to like cook full meals with wraps and tuna and stuff. But by the end, like I just really chilled it out and was
beef jerky,
Cliff Bars, trail mix, protein. Yeah. And then you do have a little stove, so you do dehydrated meals, ramen, things like that.
Nice. Little stove, like one of those Coleman?
Yeah, well, it's the one I had, it's basically like a thermos that attaches to like a fuel supply.
Oh, wow.
It's just for essentially boiling water. You can't do too much with it. Yeah, it's really nice.
Get in my truck and get stuck in the snow.
I like how you thought, we're just going to make wraps.
Yeah, okay. You get sick of stuff real quick, like peanut butter and tuna. Like right. You can only eat that for a couple weeks.
Spaghetti meatball dinner.
Yeah, peanut butter and tuna together?
Not together, right?
I did do that. Because in the beginning,
seriously?
You're trying different stuff. And I was like,
this tastes like crap.
That's harder than the walk.
Yeah.
Tuna sticks to the roof of your mouth. I'm good.
Are you foraging anything along the way? Like finding food?
You can. Some people do. There's like some onions, like wild onions.
Right. Mushrooms.
Yeah.
Wrong mushroom.
But if you eat the wrong mushroom, you're in for it. So
Jonathan,
I didn't do too much of that.
Is from Fairfield, walked the Appalachian Trail. Once you decided you were going to do it, how did you train? Did you prepare?
So I don't recommend this if anyone out there is interested in doing this, but I didn't do too much training. When I kind of decided was around this time last year. So I probably did Sleeping Giant and Castle Craig like a couple times, but I really just with work and stuff, I didn't train like you're really supposed to. So again, I went in super heavy, super out of shape, and it really kicked my butt the first month or so.
But you did it, man. For me, hiking is like I parked my car too far down the parking lot.
Yeah, I mean, when my parents dropped me off, I flew to Atlanta. They said, all right, you're going to walk home now. And so that's what I did.
That had to be. When you were driving away, you're like, okay, here we go.
Yeah,
what
I mean,
did
you just
I do?
Put your bag on and you walk until you can't see them anymore, and then you're in it. It's unlike anything else because there's not really any direction. There's no, like, counselor or boss or manager there, like, directing you where to go.
But
you
it's just a trail, walk. Though.
Yeah, right? It's just a trail.
You just walk the trail.
Yep, exactly, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
See any weirdos along the trail?
Every day. Only
really?
Yeah,
nice.
Every time
every
I open
day.
My eyes.
Every
oh,
day.
Oh, my God. Yeah, hikers are a very mixed bag. So you have people there for all different reasons. More so in the beginning, you would see some really like sketchy people and stuff. But
they're on the run, actually.
Sketchy people.
They're not hikers.
Yeah.
They're on
yeah,
the run.
Well, people are like, oh, yeah, I'm doing the trail, too. And they don't have any gear.
Because they have to.
Like, yeah,
right?
I'm like, wow. Yeah.
Why are there bloodstains on your hands?
Well, you know, there was a rumor.
Is that a foot bone?
Right. What is that?
There was a rumor the boyfriend in the Gabby Petito case had hopped onto the trail and had assumed a different name and was just like wandering. So I think people do look to get lost there a couple times too.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, that was a rumor going on before I hopped on trail. So my eyes were peeled, but I think that was settled before I got going. Yeah.
Right. But you're on the trail and you're seeing these sketchy people.
Yeah.
No gear. Yeah, I'm hiking the trail. Yeah. Or you think you're about to be murdered?
I felt okay because most of these people were like, I don't know. Just as a man, and I have another guy who is way bigger than me even. Like,
that's
I never
good.
Felt too
that
nervous.
Made it better, yeah.
Yeah. But, you know, there was a lot of, women that do the trail too. So they have to kind of be a little bit more careful and stick with groups and stuff. Yeah.
Wow. Was there a point where you thought, oh, I think I'm going to die right now?
Nothing like too extreme. So our first day or my first day on the trail, we had a blizzard. So we had
in Georgia.
Whoa. So the week before,
definitely not prepared for that.
See, for me,
and that's a sign.
That's
to me, I'm like,
this
is God saying, go back,
get on a plane, go back to Connecticut.
Yeah, like the whole week before, it was 70 degrees. So I thought I was walking in something great, and then it got down to around 8 degrees at the shelter, which is just a lean-to with three walls, and that was a little scary. Normally, I would have gone into town like later on the trail, but I was so new, I was like, I gotta kind of stick this out.
Just hunker down, yeah.
But I was okay, but there were some people that came into camp soaking wet, and it was a little touch and go for them, but that was a little scary because I was just so new and didn't really know how to prepare for something like that.
So you're new. You're mm-hmm. running into hikers that are yeah. new. And if they need help, you help them. If yeah, you need yeah. help, they help you.
Yeah, absolutely. That's kind of how it is throughout the trail. So like I said, hikers are mixed bag. 90% are very helpful and will give you good advice or kind of tell you what's up ahead or that kind of stuff. And then the other 10 you try to yeah. distance
one,
from.
One will gut you and wear like a suit. Yeah.
That's a coach you're wearing is pretty interesting.
Like a person.
I thought I saw someone who looked just like that.
Had the same head.
Ago.
Had the same head. Tim was so shocked, though. The little part of the trail that I wound up hiking, we ran into someone who's doing the whole thing, mm. and he gave himself a hiking nickname. Is oh, that sure. common, or is that?
Yeah, that's standard. So. At some point, you're going to get a trail name, is what they call it.
Trail name.
I'd be complainer.
Yeah. So
whining bitch would be mine. Right.
So everyone on the trail, like when you meet someone
hey, my feet
about
are
a month in, you're just going to ask them their name and they're going to give you something wild like blueberry pie or, you know, like, you know, something really strange. So that's wow. just how people know each other. It's just part of the
what
part
was
of
yours?
The trail. Mine was Clutch.
Oh,
yeah.
Cool.
Yeah, right, and my right. buddy's was Lefty.
There was a grandma called Walking Farts.
Yeah, you're going to see stuff like that all the time. Yeah. It's weird
stay
when
back.
Someone introduces
stay
themselves like that.
Stay back from Walking Farts.
That's cool. You'll be left alone. You get your privacy.
Even the bears left alone. What yeah. the hell happened here?
That's how the guy knew that we were like new.
Yeah,
I was
sure.
like, hey, I'm Phil. He was like, I am Rockhopper. And
yeah,
we were like,
yeah, exactly.
what?
I think I knew a couple Rockhoppers.
You are tripping balls, pal. That's right.
Jimmy Coblet's on the show, and it's a very special week. He touched on this at the end of his show last week, and that is it is the 50th anniversary of the New Haven Coliseum.
Wow.
Yes, it is. It's actually almost 50 years since my first show at the Coliseum, which was in November of 1972.
That was seeing your first show or booking your first show?
Booking my first show.
Wow.
The first, they didn't want concerts initially at the New Haven Coliseum. I had fights with them, arguments with them. The police chief was very much against it. The mayor was very much against it. They thought rock concerts were the evil empire, basically.
The devil.
Yes, the devil, you're
the
right.
Devil.
And so we decided to bring a nice, easy show in first, which was the Beach Boys. That was on November 21st of 72. So it's about 6 weeks away, the actual anniversary. And I read a newspaper article recently about it, and it reminded me of the police walking through up and down every aisle throughout the whole show and having to cut the Beach Boys set short because the police thought the audience was getting a little crazy at a Beach Boys show.
Wow.
And which they do, but they're getting crazy over fun, 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 and dance, dance, dance. It wasn't like Ozzy was on stage.
that was coming. You know. Kind of big difference, yeah.
Yeah, we ended up getting Ozzy in there, that's yeah. true. And it was really a really tough night for me because the city did not want rock concerts at the Coliseum.
The mayor, the police, everybody, they were all against it.
All against it.
Wow.
It was a war. The building director, thank goodness, pushed for it and finally got the approval for me to bring the Beach Boys rock concert. And I put in the ad, first rock concert at the New Haven Coliseum, and I got called up and told, take that out.
No. Oh.
Say first concert, but don't put rock, the word rock in it.
Wow.
Wow.
Puritan times.
Wow, that's a lot of pressure.
Yes, pilgrims in the state.
How new was the Coliseum at that point? Like brand spanking new?
Yeah, it opened up in 72 because the arena, my last arena show was September 29th of 72, which was Elton John. So it was just brand new. It was the arena closed up at the end of September, and the Coliseum opened up probably sometime this month in October, 50
wow.
years ago.
And now when you do anything for the first time, there are bumps.
Yes.
Were there bumps at the New Haven Coliseum the first night?
Well, it was all caused by the mayor and the police chief.
Oh, right.
The band loved it, and we loved it, and it was really great.
The sound was fine. All that was great.
Yeah, totally fine. Well, the sound was never good at the Coliseum. There's too much metal on top.
Right.
But
it was bouncy. Yeah.
Yeah, everybody put up with it. It was very nice. But I have to tell you, it took me 2 months to convince them to get another show into the Coliseum.
2 months.
Wow.
Yeah, I mean, it wasn't like, you know, people remember the Coliseum. We used to do 20, 30 shows a year there, which is, you know, basically once every week or two we used to do a show there. Took me over 2 months to get permission to get another show in there. It was after the Beach Boys. They didn't want another show.
Wow. And it seems weird to me because the Beach Boys was probably a very well-behaved show, a successful show.
Seriously, yeah.
Revenue for downtown.
Yeah, of
course. Why wouldn't they just say, all right, you were right, let's do it.
It's good vibrations. Yeah.
That's what I thought. And the Beach Boys were generally the accepted opening artists for every new arena that opened up because they brought what they considered a clean rock crowd in.
Yeah.
So at the Hartford Civic Center the next year, what was my first show? The Beach Boys.
Yeah.
Really?
Same year, what's my first show at the Springfield Civic Center? The Beach Boys. So they were the perennial, let's make it easy on everybody, let's bring the Beach Boys in. Good
the
crowd.
Soft opening.
No
yeah.
one will complain about the Beach
the
Boys.
The soft opening, yeah.
Except New Haven.
Come on.
50 years ago.
Yes, 50 years ago. Actually, as I mentioned, it was a couple of months before they allowed another show to come into the New Haven Coliseum. I mentioned November 21st, 72 was the Beach Boys. And the second artist to come into the New Haven Coliseum was actually Neil Young with special guest Linda Ronstadt.
Wow.
Wow.
Young Linda Ronstadt.
Which was on January 25, 1973.
Damn.
So, again, Neil Young, solo artist, soft music. Linda Ronstadt, soft music. So he toned it down a little for the city. They were happy. But after that, I let it go.
Right.
We just rocked out it.
I just don't know if I'd be able to have a conversation with Linda Ronstadt if it's like 1972 Linda Ronstadt. She's standing in front of me wearing those jean shorts and
yeah.
half shirt and no shoes. And
yeah. I'm 10.
I'd be like, I don't know what to say to you. What do you want?
Can you babysit me?
I won't say anything.
Yeah. We know your love for Linda Ronstadt.
No, my love is always for Stevie Nicks.
Right.
Yeah.
I always thought she was the hottest woman in rock and roll.
That's another one.
Sworn to Stevie. Yeah. Nice.
Yeah, with all due respect to Linda Ronstadt, don't get me wrong.
Yeah,
still,
of course. Yeah.
Still, Stevie Nicks was always
a close number two. Yes.
So if you're listening and you want to call in a favorite memory from the New Haven Coliseum, it doesn't have to be specifically a show. Don't call in Jimmy and say, I snuck in, because it irritates
I'll
him.
I'll ask you for a check.
Exactly right. You took money out of his hands.
That's right.
You bastards.
No, or I'll say, by the way, do you work for a car dealership now? Could I steal a car?
Right, exactly right. You kind of owe me.
Where's my free car?
Right.
Or do you do roofs now?
Right.
AJ, do you do roofs anymore? Okay, Dad. And will you do my roof for free?
Right. Thank
you.
Exactly.
Yeah, the New Haven Coliseum. I saw my first concert there.
Yeah.
Electric Light Orchestra.
It was done by the time I got here. My only memory is when they blew it up.
Right.
And the two police officers were running away from the big cloud that was coming.
That was a very interesting moment.
Yep.
Because the thing started imploding, and the cloud just starts coming towards the cops. And you don't know. When you see a cloud coming to you, don't know what's in there. Is there rubble in there?
Exactly.
They just start booking.
They booked it. They jump in the cars. It was a great video. I don't blame them. I did the same thing myself.
I don't blame them either.
It was totally appropriate. The Coliseum rocked right till the end.
Right.
Let's put it that way.
That's
it definitely
right.
did. Yep. It caused disturbance no matter what.
The cloud went right over Route 34. You couldn't even drive on Route 34.
All the headlights are on. That's great.
Jimmy brought life to the Coliseum. It's legendary today because the concerts that he brought there. And then as soon as he packed up and left, it was a few sad years. But then it died.
Like, yeah.
Music is what made that thing what it is and why we're so fond of it today.
It was a heartbeat.
Yeah. I mean, there were some great hockey games there, but it was really...
Music.
For me, it was about the music.
Yeah.
There's no doubt that the New Haven Coliseum will always be the heart and soul of rock and roll in Connecticut, in everybody's memory, until we all pass and people forget about their shows going to the New Haven Coliseum. But I will pretty well guarantee that people saw their favorite shows at the Coliseum. Despite it being ugly, despite the sound not being great, there was something inside that made it magical.
Well, the bands that you brought, Jimmy, were all in the height. They're all legendary rock and roll Hall of Famers now. And they were all at the peak of their performing days.
Yeah.
You're right. Good point.
It really was like, wow, if you were there, you saw history.
Yeah.
No, you're right. And we had great New Year's Eve shows 2 years in a row with the Allman Brothers Band. That gave it its a great history. They would play 2 years in a row, and I was trying to figure out the act that I might have presented there most. And my guess would be probably the J-Dub.
The box was good until just now.
Right at that moment, too.
I heard Jay Giles' band. Phil? Yeah.
Yep.
Gonna call Jimmy on the phone.
That's how exciting it was. Kill the box.
Well, my favorite moment for me at the New Haven Coliseum was I was just working for the radio station for a short period of time.
Uh-huh.
And I find myself standing backstage, and to my right, Jimmy, I'm just going over like my favorite New Haven Coliseum memory.
Yep.
And I was just working for the radio station for a short period of time, and I find myself standing backstage with a backstage pass.
Ooh.
I'm like, this is cool.
I'm king.
To my right is Jimmy Coplick, and to my left is Robert Plant.
Wow.
And I'm like, I like this job.
This is cool. I'm going to stick around for a while and do this.
It is burnt into my memory. I'm like, I am not going to speak.
Right.
These guys are talking. Then I asked him for an autograph, and he was very gracious and gave me an autograph.
Awesome.
Truly one of the nicest people that I've ever come across in the history of rock and roll. And I will say I'm working my butt off to bring Robert Plant to either Mohegan Sun or Bridgeport next year.
Really?
Awesome.
Yes. Love to see him again.
That's exciting.
That's very exciting.
I feel like you wouldn't say you're working on it unless it was
almost there.
Yeah, you know, it wasn't like a one phone call thing and you're like, I'm working on it.
It wasn't a whim.
I have a feeling if Jimmy says he's working on it on the air,
it's being worked.
Well, they approached me with the idea of going to play outdoors in Bridgeport, but I always offer the Mohegan Sun offer because it's a very special building.
Hold on. Howard's on the phone. Hold on. Howard has an offer.
I'll be seeing Howard at 11 o'clock.
All right.
He'll probably punch me in the face. All right. So, but we'll see. We'll see what happens. I think Robert Plant and Alison Krauss are going to tour again.
Nice.
Hungry Man, you're on with Jimmy Coplick.
Good morning, Jimmy. One of my favorite memories was sleeping out as a teenager for Billy Joel, Innocent Man tour.
Wow.
Yeah, you know what? Billy's one of the guys that probably played the New Haven Coliseum more than most people. He loved the New Haven Coliseum. He loved PLR in particular. With all due respect to the Fox, it wasn't on the air at the time. But I remember and it might have been an Innocent Man tour that he caught me because we had PLR do our own spots, and I chose the songs that I thought Connecticut liked most to put on the radio into the spots, and Billy's literally calls me up and goes, I just heard that spot. Who did it? Well, of course I blamed it on the radio station.
Of course, yes.
So he said to me, I don't like these songs. Here's the songs I want on the spot. I said, okay, no problem.
Cool.
No problem.
See? Yeah, no problem, Billy. Sorry.
Yep. You got it, Billy.
I'll straighten out that radio station.
Yeah, damn that person who sounds like me.
Yeah.
I brought my mom to that concert in a wheelchair, and we left early to beat the crowd. And by the time we got out to the street, his limo was coming out. He rolled his window down and handed a napkin to my mother with his signature on it.
That's so cool.
Oh, how nice. Wow.
He said, wipe your mouth. Sorry.
What a cool dude. Hey, thank you. Ryan in Woodbridge.
Yeah, so as a kid, I used to work at the car show. They used to do an annual car show there. And we used to always go to the WPLR tent and talk with Sam and try to get free swag. And then I was 15. Fish was playing there. I want to say it was like 98. My buddy's dad dropped us off. We thought we could buy tickets, go into the box office, and they're like, see all those people with their finger in the air? They need tickets, too. So we walked outside trying to get tickets. We decided to go to the back entrance where people were coming off 95. We looked to where the buses were, and we saw Sam sitting outside. He came over to us, started talking. We told him we didn't have tickets. He pulled two tickets, fourth row floor, out of his wallet, gave it to us, and we started running like we were Charlie in the Chocolate Factory.
Wow.
Pretty awesome.
You got the golden tickets.
It is a great story.
Cool.
Yes, that was November 24th, by the way, 98. November 24th, 98, when Fish was there. And I miss Sam a lot. I was sitting at Sam's funeral, and people were doing wonderful eulogies, and literally every eulogy said, I want to thank Sam for getting me these free tickets. And I'm sitting there going, wait a second, these tickets are supposed to go to listeners, right, not to friends. And I think the steam started coming out of my ears as the eighth person and ninth person came up and thanked Sam for my tickets.
Well, Jimmy's really emotional. Look at me. He's really upset. He loved him so much.
He must have loved Sam.
Oh, my God. Look
how upset he is.
He's almost crying.
There's just another story. If you were at the funeral, you would have been up there, too. Talking about your Fish tickets.
Anthony in East Haven.
Good morning, everyone.
Good morning.
Mr. Koplik, I've attended a lot of shows at the New Haven Coliseum. And in the early 70s, he used to make an announcement before every concert happened. Wow. Do you remember what that announcement was?
Put your pants back on?
I don't quite remember, but it probably had something to do with, please behave, because it could be our last show here, because the town doesn't like it, and the police chief doesn't like it, and the mayor doesn't like us.
No, it used to start out with, if anyone is having a bad trip, look for the guys with the black armbands. They're there to help you.
Oh, yes, the dead shows. Yes,
wow.
Yes, wow. Dead shows. Yes.
Nice.
I knew all about that since they dosed me once at the Palace Theater, and I had a bad trip.
Look, forgot the black armband. Where is that guy? Where is he?
Wow, Anthony, that's great. Thank you.
Thank you.
See, memories.
Jimmy, do you remember what the last concert at the New Haven Coliseum was?
Yes, it was Tool.
Oh, wow. Oh, that's a great
Tool.
Way to
go. I think it was 2002 or something like that. But that was the last show.
Wow. Yeah. There's another anniversary today that coincides with the 50th anniversary of the New Haven Coliseum. And that is, today is the 2-year anniversary of Eddie Van Halen passing.
Oh, boy. I didn't know that. Really?
And I remember you dropped everything you were doing, and you drove in, and we did the afternoon show together.
Yep.
Yes, you're right.
Eddie and the band Van Halen, when they got this new lead singer, Sammy Hagar, decided they wanted to record a concert movie of them.
Yeah.
And they picked the New Haven Coliseum to do it.
Yes, and it was the first time I realized what goes into these things, because they had to wear the same clothes each night. Because they didn't know which night they would use for which song.
Yeah.
So they literally wore the same clothes each night, which I thought was a little, why are you wearing the same thing? I remember going to Eddie, who was really my friend in the band, since I almost got him killed once. We've had a good relationship. And I said, you're wearing the same thing, Eddie. He goes, we're filming. I don't know which night we're going to use, you know, any song. So I got to make sure that we look the same. I never thought about that. That was interesting. I think it was called Without a Net.
Live Without a Net. Yeah. Exactly right.
You can't have two different outfits on.
I went the first night, and his guitar cable went out. This is before wireless.
Uh-huh.
And it was a problem, and then they got the cord out, then he did the solo. And, you know, Eddie just smiled the whole way through, had a cigarette in his mouth and just smiled.
Yep.
Like, no problem.
Yep, I got
and
this.
They, so in that, if you get that video, it's the second night guitar solo.
Right.
Not the first night. A guitar solo. But didn't you almost lose their clothes at the dry cleaner?
Yes. Oops. Yes, it was really disastrous. Right. The shows were in August. I don't know if you remember the opening act, which is a pretty big opening act. You guys remember the opening act? Come on. It was August 26th and 27th with the two dates.
Yeah, it was.
Tickets were $16.50 and $14.50. I probably never shouldn't say that. I probably shouldn't say the ticket prices.
Right.
But the opening act was BTO.
Wow.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah.
So it's BTO VH. Nice.
Yeah. So, they lost the clothing for the second night. It was disastrous.
Oops.
We finally literally went there and searched through every single piece of clothing. And it had never gotten washed. It got put on the side. So we think they were going to steal it.
Oh.
So the clothes came right before they got on stage because they had to be dry cleaned and everything like that.
The bands are wearing leisure suits.
Well, Jimmy, thanks for coming on. Friends of Jimmy happening now?
Yeah. Yeah, friendsofjimmy.com if you want to join. Free tickets and tickets first for all shows before they go on sale.
Thank you, brother. Talk to you next Thursday.
You got it.
This was the Chaz and AJ podcast. Thanks for getting through the whole damn thing. Subscribe now and please rate and review us. Unless you have terrible things to say, then please don't. Also, share this podcast with friends. Chaz and AJ in the Morning happens weekdays from 5:30 a.m. to 10 a.m. out of New Haven, Connecticut on the mighty 99.1 PLR.